I'm going to start off my message today talking about someone I actually know almost nothing about, and that's Jon Bon Jovi. Do we have any Jon Bon Jovi fans in here? Oh, okay, we got a couple. Some of you were living on a prayer yesterday for the OSU game. Do you see what I did there? That's like the only Jon Bon Jovi song that I probably know. So I thought that would be funny to sort of slip that in. But he has this foundation, and he has opened up a couple of community restaurants in New Jersey. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with what a community restaurant is. I was not. But it's this really cool idea where they're trying to set up this space for people to come and have a really good meal. But more than that, where neighbors and people in the community could get together around a meal and connect with each other. Just have conversations with each other and get to know each other. So one of the things that they do in these restaurants is when you walk in and you sit down, there's actually no prices on the menu. And that's really intentional. They do that so that no matter what your background is, no matter what your economic status is, you could come and have a meal at this place. And what they're finding is as they're providing just these opportunities for people to talk to each other, that neighbors and people in the community are really getting to know each other, and it's this really cool thing. You know, we are finding more and more that eating meals with people is actually really healthy for us. I don't know where you eat most of the meals in your house, but in the Ingebretson house, we eat at this really cool old antique table that we got from Scott's grandmother. He was very close to her. She was a wonderful woman. And so years ago when she passed away, we got her table and chairs. It was also one of the first nice adult pieces of furniture that we had. We had only been married a couple of years. We were students. Pretty much everything in our house we had stolen from Scott's mom's basement. So we kind of felt like grown-ups when we got this table. And it's really special to us. And we have pretty much eaten all of our meals at that table ever since. It is by far the place that we connect the most as a family in our house. We have dinner around the table. We do birthdays. My kids do homework and they color. Just Friday night, we had a whole group of people over to our house and we sat around that table and we just talked to each other. I read an author recently who said, community happens around the table. And I thought, yeah, that's right. It does happen around the table because that's the place where we slow down, we take time to look at each other and talk to each other, and we connect together. You know, taking time to eat with people around a table is really good for us. Now, there's a lot of research to sort of back this up. The American College of Pediatrics has actually published a number of studies on the benefits of family meals for children. So children who are able to have meals together with their family tend to have lower stress levels, decreased depression, increased academic productivity. Oxford University published an article last year talking about how people who eat together generally feel better about themselves, and they have more of a support system around them. Cornell just recently published something about people who eat together in the workplace. So if you eat lunch with the people that you work with, it actually shows that you usually work better as a team and you're more efficient in the things that you're getting done. Taking time to eat with people where we can talk and connect with them is really healthy for us. But unfortunately, we are doing that less and less. You know, as an adult, statistically, most of us eat about a third of our evening dinner meals alone. And on an average week, if we have about, you know, 21 meals that we eat a week, 3 meals a day, 7 days a week, 21, we probably eat about 10 of those all by ourselves. And so most of us are eating with people less and less. We're grabbing meals quickly on the run, right? On our way to some sort of activity. Or we're multitasking. How often do you eat a meal with someone and instead of engaging with them, we're on our phone, we're trying to get emails done, we're trying to catch up on stuff, right? Eating is good for us, and it's good for us to eat with people, but most of us are doing it less and less. Now, it might actually surprise you that the church has actually always thought it was really important to do something as simple as sit together and eat a meal with people. We see this really clearly with Jesus. Jesus says about himself in Luke 7, "The Son of Man came eating and drinking." Jesus ate meals with people a lot. And he ate meals with all kinds of people. He ate meals with people who had influence. He ate meals with people that didn't have any influence. He ate meals with people who were really respectable. And he ate meals with people that no one wanted to be seen with. He ate meals with people who were really into his message and believed him. And he ate meals with people who didn't believe him at all. He ate so many meals with people, he even got a reputation as being a glutton and a drunkard. That's what you want, right? That sort of reputation. I don't think Jesus was either one of those things, but I think he was really intentional about taking time to share a meal with people. And I don't think that was by accident. I think Jesus felt like that was part of sharing his message to eat meals with people, and it was a way of communicating what the kingdom of God is like. You know, there's something that happens when we sit down together and we talk to people over a meal that connects us. It breaks down barriers. It gives us opportunities to talk about important things, including our faith. We're in the middle of this series all about evangelism. You know, how do we share Jesus? And one of the things I love is that this sermon series is super practical. It's things that all of us can do, like encouraging people, speaking peace, speaking truth. And then today we're gonna talk about just the simple act of eating with people. That something as ordinary as inviting people to our table for a dinner could give us opportunities to share our faith. So I've titled my message, Eating with Others, Practicing Radically Ordinary Hospitality. Will you guys pray with me? God, we just invite your presence here. We want to hear your word. We want to do your word. We want to hear from you. We want to be people who are living with our eyes focused outward on what you're doing. Would you fill this place? Would you anoint my words? Would you make your word come alive in our hearts? We just invite you here. In your name, amen. So we're going to be jumping into an Old Testament passage today. We're going to be looking at the story of Abraham, who invites in a couple of people, and just sort of see what happens when he does that. So if you have your Bibles and you want to turn with me to Genesis 18, or you have your phones, it'll also be up on the screen. And we're going to sort of use this passage as our roadmap to pull out a couple of principles that I hope will be helpful as we start thinking about this practice of eating with people. So let's read Genesis 18, the first five verses. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. And when he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and then go on your way. Now that you have come to your servant." "Very well," they answered, "do as you say." So as we jump into this passage and we start looking at it, I think there's a couple of things that we can learn. And the first thing is this: eating with others means we are willing to be inconvenienced. You know, it's almost shocking as we look at this passage how quick Abraham is to sort of drop everything that he's doing and go over to these guys in the story. This is what verse 2 says again. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. And when he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. So here we see Abraham, he's hanging out by his tent one day, just sort of doing his thing, and he looks up and he sees these guys passing by. Now the text says he doesn't just see them, but it says he hurried over to meet them. Now I want you to grab onto that word hurried, because as we read this story, I want you to get this sense of the eagerness we see in Abraham to drop what he's doing and go over to them. Now I have to be honest, if it were me, I'm not sure that I would feel the same way. If I go out to my window one day and I see some people loitering in my lawn, my first thought is probably not, "Oh, I should go say hi and invite them in for a meal." My first thought is probably to maybe even be a little suspicious or a little annoyed that they're hanging out in my front yard. I would wonder what they were doing. You know, have you ever had somebody show up at your front door? Maybe they were selling something or wanted to sign you up for something, and they knocked and you were not expecting anyone. And how did you feel in that moment? You sort of feel a little like, "Oh, who's here? Do I have to go talk to them? Like, what are they doing?" And so we tend to feel sometimes like it's this really inconvenient thing. But we don't see that in Abraham in this story at all. In fact, I think we see the opposite. Abraham is incredibly eager to go out to these guys to stop whatever he's doing and to go take time for them. And I think we can learn something from that, because as we talk about how we're intentionally going to have people in our home to eat with us, I think that means we're actually going to have to create space in our lives to do that. I don't think we're surprised that we don't do that very well in our culture. You know, as a whole, we are very task-oriented. We tend to be incredibly busy. We sort of feel like time is money, right? We really like to be productive. In fact, just yesterday, the Lord sort of called me out on this. That's always interesting when that happens. I was at the grocery store, and I won't tell you which one I was at, but I was scanning my groceries on like the self-scanner, you know? And it was taking like more than like a second for each of them to show up on the thing. And I was feeling so irritated that it was taking so long. And I remember thinking, I should have gone to the other grocery store. Their stuff scans really fast. Like, what is taking so long? So we operate a lot on busy. And so for a lot of us to really take time to sit and just to be with people and to take an hour or two and connect over a meal can be challenging for us, and we can feel like it's a waste of time. But you know, as we're talking in this series about how do we orient our lives to really be outward focused, I think we're gonna have to start by being willing to take time for people. So let's just ask that question. How quick are you to take time for people? Do you feel like that's important, or do you mostly feel like people are an inconvenience to your schedule? You know, there's this little phrase in the beginning of these verses that we often skip right over, but I actually think they tell us a lot. And it's this little phrase, in the heat of the day. I don't know if you saw that. You know, the heat of the day in Abraham's time would have been this period of the day when it had been really hot, and you'd been working all morning, and then you would take a break and you would sort of wait until it cooled down before you would get back to work. So if we put that into our context, basically Abraham is in the middle of his nap time, which I don't know what nap time is like in your house, but in my house, I am a mom to three small children. Nap time is really sacred time for me. If there is one part of the day that you do not mess with, it is nap time in my house, because it is the time it is quiet and it is like me time. Thank you. Yes, someone else hears me on that. Okay, so I have this vivid memory of when our oldest daughter Ella was a baby, and I had just put her down for a nap one day, and I was really excited to get some alone time. And I had all these plans of what I was gonna do, and out of the blue, Scott, my husband, just like showed up. And he came in and he was like, hey, honey, I came home early. We're gonna hang out. Now, at the time, I was a full-time, working mom, and he was a full-time student. We didn't have a ton of hanging out time. So it was really kind of sweet. But I have to tell you, in that moment, it did not feel sweet to me. I was just like irritated that he had busted into my time, you know? And I was trying not to be a complete jerk about it. But finally, I remember he looked at me and he said, are you mad at me for coming home to my own house? I was like, yes, I thought I was gonna have my time. You need to get out. He puts up with me, so bless his heart. That's kind of silly, but that's sort of how we feel sometimes, isn't it? Like making time for people can be a really big inconvenience to all the other things that we wanna get done. And I think it's gonna be really hard to create space in our lives for simple things like we've been talking about, like having people over for dinner and just chatting around a meal, if we aren't willing to create space in our schedules for it. And you know, the truth is sometimes taking time for people feels inconvenient because it actually is inconvenient, and that's okay. It can be really inconvenient to take a quick walk through your neighborhood and actually take time to speak with the people that you pass, maybe introduce yourself to some neighbors that you haven't met before. It can feel inconvenient to answer phone calls when you are in like screen mode, you know? I'm not answering anybody's calls today. It can feel inconvenient to walk into a room and see a new person and go right up to them and make them feel really welcome. And it can feel really inconvenient to clean your house and invite people over and have them wreck it in like 5 minutes flat. You ever had that happen? Some of you know. Yeah, you felt that. All of those things take effort and they take time investment. And I think the question is, do we care enough about people that we're willing to create space for them? Now, I want to clarify something really quick before we move on, because what I am not saying when I say that is that we all need to be extroverts. I'm not saying you need to be a person that's just constantly on all the time and just loves to chat with people. I am an introvert, and the Lord has put me with an extrovert, and I love him dearly, but sometimes he just drives me crazy because he's just, you know, chat, chat, chat all over the place. And I know I can't do that. If I do that all the time, I will burn out. So it is okay to take time if you need space and solitude to refill. I'm not saying we all need to be super chatty extroverts. I'm simply asking the question, do we care enough about people that we're willing to create space for them in our schedules? And I think if we're willing to do that, that we will actually see a lot of people around us who need to be welcomed and need to be invited in. You know, we have people at all of our campuses, probably some in this room, who come in here every weekend. They feel isolated. They feel alone. They feel like no one notices if they're here or not. We have people in our neighborhoods and where we work that don't have a community around them. And if we would just take a minute to create some space and to welcome them and just even say, hey, would you like to come over and grab some coffee with me? Would make a huge difference for them. You know, we're going into this week of Thanksgiving where a lot of us have plans to be with our family. What would it look like for you to create some space for people? You know, could you see somebody in this church or in our community who maybe isn't from this culture? Maybe he's never celebrated Thanksgiving. Just say, hey, would you like to come have a meal with my family? We have single people who might be far away from their families this next week. Could you take some time and create some space and just say, hey, why don't you come be with us? Are we willing to take time for people? I think eating with others means we're willing to be inconvenienced. It also means we're willing to invite people to the table. You know, Abraham doesn't just go over and say hi to these guys. He actually invites them in. So this is what we read, starting in verse 3. If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and then go on your way now that you have come to your servant. You know, as we read this story, I don't think it should be lost on us that when Abraham invites these guys in, they are basically strangers to him. And I think what we're going to find out as we keep reading this story is that they're actually messengers that God sends to give them a really important word, but Abraham and Sarah don't know that at this point. Now, some scholars have wondered if Abraham, you know, maybe had some idea that these guys were something special, because in the very beginning of our passage, it does say the Lord appeared to him under the trees. I don't really know. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But either way, these guys were still virtually strangers to them. And yet what we see is he goes right up to them and he invites them for dinner. And you know, we kind of read that and we think, I wonder why he went that far. You know, he could have just like given them a glass of water, maybe checked on them. Do they need something? Why would he do that? And I think it's a couple of things. I think first we just need to realize that in ancient Near Eastern culture that Abraham was a part of, they valued hospitality. So this idea of welcoming people in would have sort of been ingrained in their culture. Some of you may come from cultures like that. But you know, I think beyond that, I think Abraham was so welcoming to these strangers because he knew what it was like to be a stranger. If you know the story of Abraham, then you know that he's someone that God called from his own country to travel far away to a new place. I think he knew what it was like to be a stranger. And you know, as we read all through scripture, we find that God's people have always valued welcoming and inviting in strangers. In the book of Leviticus, we read this. Leviticus 19:34, the foreigner or the stranger residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. It's this whole idea of remember at one point you were a stranger, so now I want you to turn around and treat strangers really well. We see this same idea in the New Testament. In fact, it's one of the things that really set the New Testament church apart and helped to spread the gospel, this whole idea of welcoming in strangers and giving them something to eat and something to drink and a place to rest. The New Testament Greek word for that is hospitality. The word hospitality in the Greek is actually this word philoxenia. Now, philoxenia is a combination of two other Greek words. The word philo, which is the word for love. So, you know, Philadelphia, the city of love. Philo meaning love, and xenos meaning stranger. And so philoxenia literally means lover of strangers. So when we read these verses in the New Testament talking about hospitality and welcoming people in to sit at your table and to eat with you, we are most often reading this word philoxenia. So we have verses like 1 Peter 4:9, offer hospitality to one another. Romans 12:13, practice hospitality. Hebrews 13:2, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. It was expected that you would be showing hospitality to strangers and inviting them in. In fact, the early church thought this was so important that you couldn't even be an elder or a leader in the church if you were not offering hospitality to people. You know, you might be a leader here at this church, and I don't mean on staff necessarily. You might lead a small group. You might lead a ministry team. You might lead a 12 for 12 group. Are you leading the way in inviting people in and offering them hospitality? You know, I think it's unfortunate because we've lost a little bit of this practice in the church today. We don't talk about it very much. I think because we've done that, we've become a little bit predictable. You know, most people that assume that Christians are going to hang out with other Christians, right? That doesn't really shock anybody. And that's a good thing. Christian fellowship is a fantastic thing. But everyone sort of expects that we're gonna do that, right? And I wonder what would happen if we started purposefully inviting people to our tables that are outside of our normal circles. If we really started to practice this idea of loving strangers well, and we really let it grip us that at one point all of us were strangers far away from God and he invited us to his table. And so if we really looked at how do I invite people who are outside of the church? How do I invite people to eat with me who are not already my friends? How do I invite in people that no one thinks I would take the time to eat with? And you know, I think if we started doing that, people would be surprised because we would be loving people in a really unique way. Most of the time, we prefer to stay with the people that we're really comfortable with. It's easier to do that. And so we get really separated and we get really divided. I don't know if you've noticed our country is very divided. What would it look like if we became the people, instead of staying that way, who said, we're gonna lead the way in bridging that gap and bringing people in and inviting in people outside of our circles because we love you and we want you to be a part. Michael Frost has written this really great book called Surprise the World. It's really small. You could read it in one setting. I think we have it out at the bookstore. It's a great read. And he says this, the table is the great equalizer in relationships. When we eat together, we discover the inherent humanity of all people. We share stories and hope and fears and disappointments. People open up to each other, and we ourselves can open up to share the same things, including our faith in Jesus. What kind of impact would we have on people if we were willing to start inviting in people outside of our circles? People who believe differently than we do. People who fall on a different political spectrum than we do. People who see differently on social issues. People from different racial backgrounds. What would it look like if we were leading the way in doing that? You know, Jesus puts it this way in Luke 14. He says, then Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. You know, I don't think Jesus is saying it's bad to eat with friends and family. I just think Jesus knew that we like to stay where we're really comfortable. And I think he wants us to think bigger picture than that. So let me just ask you, who could you invite to your table? Not in this weird sort of coerced, you know, kind of strange way. We're not trying to hit people over the head with the, you know, with the Bible. We're just trying to say we love you enough that we want you to be at our table because we want to love you with the way that God has loved us. You know, eating with others means we're willing to be inconvenienced. It means that we're inviting people to the table. It also means that we're generous with what we have. Abraham is really generous in this story. If we keep reading, starting in verse 6, it says, "So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. 'Quick,' he said, 'get 3 seahs of the finest flour and knead it and bake some bread.' And then he ran to the herd and selected a choice tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. And while they ate, he stood near them under a tree." Basically, they prepare a feast for these guys. Sarah does most of the work, let's be honest. He pretty much just tells her, "Hey, I want you to bake a truckload of bread." Now, he comes to her and he says, "I want you to use 3 seahs," I don't even know if that's how you say that word, but it's what I'm going with, 3 seahs of flour. Now, we don't know exactly how much that was, but we think it was something like 6 gallons of flour. I don't know how hungry Abraham thought that these guys were, but he had Sarah working really hard preparing this feast. And then he goes to his servant and he says, "Hey, let's get a calf and bring it out." And it's almost like, let's get out the good steaks, you know, we're gonna serve them to these guys. And so they prepare this whole feast and then they bring it to these guys and they say, "Why don't you come in and sit and eat?" You know, there's something about the nature of hospitality that's really generous with people, that sort of lives with open hands for people and just offers people what we have really gladly. Abraham and Sarah are really generous with these guys. And I wonder, do we have that same generosity with people where they can tell that we're eager to share what we have and that we're really glad to do it? Now, when we talk about generosity, I feel like I need to say that it comes in a lot of different forms. Generosity is not one size fits all, and I understand that not all of us are in a place to offer generosity the way that Abraham did. You know, you might be here today in a really financially difficult season of your life. You might be unemployed, you might be a single parent working on making ends meet, you might be paying off school debt, and there's just not a lot extra to go around. Generosity does not have to look the same, and it does not have to mean that you can give a 3-course meal to someone. You know, it's not about creating this beautiful, magazine-worthy, Pinterest sort of experience. That's entertaining people. We're not talking about entertaining people. We're talking about making space in our lives in such a way that points them to just the generous nature of who God is. And that's completely different than entertaining. And so what that means is if you're in a place where you can't have a huge meal, that is totally okay. You can practice generosity in a lot of other ways. Maybe you could be a host. "Hey, I don't know that I could provide a meal, but I could provide the setting. Why don't you come over to my house? Let's have dinner." You could do a potluck. You know, everybody brings a little bit of something. You could have s'mores around the fire pit. Might be a little cold to do that at this point, but you could do something like that. Listen, if you are a college student, go steal some food out of your parents' refrigerator, okay? Gather a couple people up, pretend like it's yours, and just say, "Hey, let's eat together." And if you are a parent of young kids, it is totally okay if there is Cheerio dust on the floor and things are a little bit crazy and you wonder if you actually spoke any complete sentences. That is totally fine. Just be willing to give what you have. And you know, I think being authentic in those places with people is actually a really big gift. Because we live in a day and age where we have a lot of really perfect looking, glossy, amazing things thrown at us all the time. And people don't need more of that. We have enough places to go for a great meal and enough places to go to be entertained. What people need is just really practical opportunities of showing God's love with them by being generous. And simply saying, "This is the life stage that I'm in, but I want you here anyway because I love you." Eating with others means we're willing to be inconvenienced. It means we're inviting people to the table. It means we're generous with what we have. And then eating with others means we expect God to show up. You know, I think as we practice just sharing simple meals with people, that we should pray and expect that God will show up. So we're gonna read the last few verses in our passage today, starting in verse 9. It says this, "Where is your wife Sarah?" they asked him. "There in the tent," he said. And then one of them said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already very old, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, "After I'm worn out and my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Will I really have a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son.'" Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, "I did not laugh." But he said, "Yes, you did." It's nothing quite like being called out by the Lord, right? You tried to say you didn't laugh, but I happen to know that you did. You know, when Abraham and Sarah started this meal, they didn't know that this was how it was going to end up. All they knew was that they had invited a couple of guys in for a dinner and they were gonna go on their way. And in the middle of that, they get to see God show up. And it becomes this really significant moment for them, especially for Sarah, because God speaks directly to her. You know, God had already spoken to Abraham. If we had a chance to look at the previous chapter, he had already come to Abraham and said, "Hey, you're gonna have a son." But now he shows up and he speaks directly to Sarah, and it's this really significant moment for her. And what I'm just struck by is the fact that God did that in such an ordinary setting. You know, he didn't show up for her in a worship service. It wasn't a mountaintop experience. It wasn't a Holy Spirit conference. It wasn't any big event that they had planned, you know, at a church. It was simply God showed up over a meal and he spoke to them. You know, God loves to turn ordinary situations into extraordinary experiences, and God can meet people anywhere, even in the most ordinary places, like sitting around a table and just eating with people. God is not limited by the setting, and he certainly is not confined to the four walls of this building. But I think a lot of us look at the really ordinary things that we do every day, things like eating with people, and it seems so simple that we don't really expect God to be there. And so we end up looking a little bit like Sarah. Did you see what it said in this passage about her? "Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already very old, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, 'After I am worn out and my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure?'" You see, she hears this and she thinks, "There's no way that could happen." You know, it sort of actually makes me chuckle the way the Bible writes this. The Bible is funny sometimes, guys, if we pay attention to it, because she laughs to herself and she thinks, "Man, I am just worn out. Could this really happen?" I think she was like literally worn out because she had just missed her nap. And like Abraham had just had her cooking all this bread for these people that she was not expecting. And so she's tired. And I think she's worn out. Physically, I think she had been wanting a baby for a really long time. You know what that's like, where just emotionally you're worn out from waiting for something that hasn't happened yet. And so she hears this and she thinks, "Is that even possible? Could God even do that, really?" You ever felt like that? Where you just really question, could God actually show up and do that? You know, I think so often we don't have a lot of expectation of God showing up in really simple places. And we don't always think that he can do what he actually says he can do. But the truth is that God could meet you around your table, just like he met with Sarah and Abraham. And God is still in the business of changing lives. Let me tell you the story of a woman whose name is Rosaria Butterfield. I don't know if you've ever heard her story or not, but she is someone who will very clearly say, "My life was changed because of a really simple invitation to dinner." She was a professor at Syracuse University, actually graduated from OSU. Very bright, academic, life was going well, very successful. She was also very anti-Christian and anti-God. In fact, she felt like Christians stood for pretty much everything that she was against. So she decided she was going to write a book all about Christians and just, you know, sort of expose all of these things that were wrong. So in the middle of researching this book, she published an article in a local paper really coming against some well-known Christian groups. And she just like cut them to pieces. I mean, just like tore them up in this editorial. Well, there was a local pastor who read it and he thought, "Well, I'm going to write her a letter." So he did. He wrote her this note, and he, you know, engaged with her and asked her a couple of questions. And at the end of the note, he said, "Would you like to come to dinner with my wife and I?" Well, she was sort of floored by his note because it had been really kind and really gracious, even though the article had been pretty, you know, hard. And so she thought, well, I'm going to accept the invitation. If nothing else, maybe I can do some research on these people. You know, I'm researching this book, so I should probably be around a few people who say that they're Christians so that I can, you know, do some research on them. And so she talks about pulling up into the driveway for that first meeting and sitting in her car and having this sense like she was going in to just eat with the enemy. You know, this could go really horribly wrong. And she says when she got in there, they were just really welcoming to her. They were very kind to her. They talked to her and asked her questions about her life. And they ended up, you know, becoming friends. They developed a friendship with each other. And so that first invitation to dinner led to a second invitation and a third invitation and a fourth invitation. And at the same time, she started reading the Bible to research her book, and all of this stuff sort of collided together for her, and she ended up giving her heart to the Lord. Yeah. She has this really incredible story of what God has done in her life. And she just recently released a book, and one of the, you know, parts of her title for the book was this phrase, radically ordinary hospitality. And I loved it, so I stole it for my title. But it's true, you know, sharing meals with people is incredibly ordinary. And yet when God shows up, he can radically change people's lives. You know, I wonder, do we really believe when we invite people to our table that God could show up, that that could actually be a sacred place for people to just encounter the love of God through us? Do we see our tables as this place where people could come in and just enjoy the welcoming presence of God? You know, I think we're surrounded with a lot of people who just need a place where they can feel safe, where they can feel heard, where they can feel loved and welcomed really well. Some of us have people like that in our family. We have people where we work and in our neighborhoods who just really need someone to come alongside them and say, "Hey, I've made some space for you. Why don't you come eat with me?" You invite them to your table and simply offer them the hospitality of Jesus and what he's done in your life. You know, I love what God says to Sarah in these verses, because after she laughs, you know, to herself and thinks, "Now that I'm worn out, this is really gonna happen." This is what he says: "Is anything too hard for the Lord? Is anything too hard for the Lord? Is any person too hard for the Lord to speak to? Is any setting too simple for the Lord to show up in?" You know, I wonder if there are some of us in here who are sort of in a season of life like Sarah was. You've been going through some stuff that's just been a disappointment. You've been going through some things, you know, where you have unmet expectations, things you were hoping for that didn't really work out. And you just need to know that the Lord could show up for you again. And that if you were willing to step out of your comfort zone and invite some people to your table, that God could be there and God could do something. God is still in the business of changing people's lives when we invite his spirit to be at work. You know, this weekend actually for me is 15 years since I started walking with the Lord. And I looked at it yesterday and thought, oh, and I get to preach this weekend. That's incredible. God is still in the business of changing lives. And I'm really thankful for that. Would you guys stand with me